Hello and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast, where today I am thrilled to be joined by my very own co-host, Mr. Paul Bulpit, for what can only be described as my favourite episode to record each year, where we get to look back on all of the wonderful guests that we've had join us and talk about what we've learned from them and what we're going to take forward. I love this episode, Paul, don't you?
Great that we can do it together as well, Claire.
Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from The Wow Company. If you're growing a UK business with a team of 8 to 80 people, you're in the right place. Every fortnight, we share honest conversations with brilliant business minds, exploring the realities of leadership, the challenges that come with growth, and the practical ideas that make a real difference. From purpose to profit, people to process, this is your space for fresh thinking and down-to-earth inspiration. Should we talk about 2025? I don't mean to sound like my parents here, but I feel like this year has gone so quickly. What's been your take on 2025?
So I think 2025 has been a tough year for lots of people leading businesses. There's not loads of people that are killing it, loads of people having a good time. There are some that are, but I think generally there's been a lot of uncertainty, a lot of delayed decisions.
I think I've heard more positives this year than last year. I think people are starting to adapt, aren't they, to this kind of new climate that we're in.
Just to jump in there, a lot of the evidence we're seeing from our clients in the research that we do is actually the people that have the higher expectations, slightly more positive outlook, are actually the ones that are outperforming. And I think there's definitely undeniably these are difficult trading conditions, but actually there's opportunity within it. We'll talk about it in a bit, but by controlling on what we can control and just like having like higher, slightly more positive expectations, there is evidence that leads to greater success as well.
Mm, it's all in the mindset, isn't it?
Possibly.
Shall we have a little think about some of these guests that have joined us this year then?
Yeah, so I think what we're going to do today is go through, we've had so many great guests this season, from Olympic rowers. We've had two Olympic rowers. And though some of the conversations are so good that I've been reprimanded by our producers for actually going on like far too long. And the editors have had to like spend ages like cutting it down into like a meaningful podcast. But we've had Olympic rowers. We had the managing director of Waitrose. Some like proper, really interesting, fascinating, in-depth conversations. And I think what we're going to do for today's episode is basically look ahead to 2026, but cover off some of our highlights of this year. And some of the work we've been doing at WOW is to think about, given the current times, current economic situation, trading conditions, what does 2026 look like? And what can businesses do to put themselves in the best position for 2026? And we boiled those down into six pillars that we're calling, for the sake of this, the six golden rules for 2026. And as we go through today's episode, we're going to pull on some of the conversations we've had, some of the fantastic insight we've had from some of our guests this year.
Touching on that then, that first pillar, and I think you just mentioned it a little bit there as well, is to focus only on what you can control. So that's all about directing your energy towards the things that you have that full control over, right? And that's where you can start to become more productive and things start to feel a little bit easier. I think it's a really common trait amongst humans in general that we have a lot of energy focused on those things that are out of our control. Like you were just talking about with the climate and the economic state, and you know, and what if this person leaves the business, or what if that happens, or what if that client doesn't renew their contract, or whatever it looks like. Whereas actually, how can you hone in on those things that are really within your control that can really make a difference to how you keep moving forward?
Yeah, I had a really interesting conversation with Ben Hunt Davis, the Olympic rower about this, the guy that wrote "Will It Make the Boat Go Faster?" Two things to pull out. One was, everyone knows Ben as Olympic gold medal winning rower, but actually before that he went 9 years without winning anything. And in the conversation we had, he talked about how within like GB rowing, he had a reputation for being a perennial loser, basically. And there was a turning point that he had where he had a new coach, and the coach asked him, why do you think you're in this position? Why do you think you're not winning? And all of the reasons that he came out were funding, were he even joked and said the weather, the facilities, whatever else. But it was never his own thing. And Ben said that his turning point that then led him to Olympic gold was that moment of taking personal accountability. You can control whether or not the boat goes faster. There are things within your control, down to how you train, how you turn up every day, how you take your strokes, that will make the boat go faster. But you can only influence the result. You can't control the result. So their thing was, will it make the boat go faster? Let's focus on what we control and what's within our control.
Yeah. And that's such an important point. You know, I mentioned it kind of jokingly earlier, but it's all in the mindset. But it absolutely is, because the minute you take that accountability, in Ben's case, you know, actually stop focusing on the result and focus on what you can do just to make that boat go faster. I think it makes such a world of difference, doesn't it?
If there's any cricket fans listening, I don't know where how badly England will be doing in the Ashes by the time this episode goes up. But certainly after the first two tests, you've got an extremely talented England team, like generational talents. But actually their coach, Brendan McCullum, came out after the second test. They did pretty poorly and said it's all in the top two thirds. Even there, you know, elite sport, like top two thirds mindset is making all the difference.
People knew I was a serial loser, and that's just the way they thought. I mean, you know, and that's it's not meant to be kind of, you know, judgmental or whatever, but that's just the way it was.
Yeah. This philosophy, will it make the boat go faster? When you're sat on the start line of the final in Sydney, does that give you something in your head that you know that you've done everything you possibly could?
So what we did is we spent a certain amount of time looking back and going, and look at the changes we've made. Look at how far we've come already. We've been able to do this and this and this and this. So presumably this next problem, we've solved the last 15 problems. Presumably, I don't know how we'll do this yet, but let's have the confidence that we can do this thing because of all the other things we've done so far. So sitting on the start line, we had confidence born out of knowing the progress we'd made, knowing the change we'd made.
Should we move on to our second pillar?
Yeah, so the second pillar is to get exciting about the year ahead. And I guess there's two ways that people go into the Christmas break. Is one is either with like fireworks, and but there's an awful lot of people I know that are just kind of like crashing into Christmas and are just looking forward to having a bit of a break. So getting excited about the year ahead can be a bit of a challenge. How are you feeling about 2026, Luke?
I'm one of those annoying people, I think, Paul, that actually I like to spend this, particularly the time in between Christmas and New Year. And I genuinely do this. I'm not just saying this. I genuinely spend it as a bit of reflection. You know, what did I enjoy? What didn't I enjoy over the year? You know, what can I focus on next year? This should be really important. And maybe I've not focused on enough this year. And I don't actively sit down with a pen and paper and go, right, what? I just find myself kind of reflecting on those things. I find it quite useful. And that really helps me to energize for the year ahead. I think when you've had a tough year, that reflection can really easily turn into like a bit of a woe is me kind of moment where you think, oh, this has been really tough and now I've got to go and do it all again. But actually, when you sit and reflect in a really kind of constructive way, I think it can be really useful because you start to notice, you know, we talk a little bit about that accountability in the previous pillar, but like you start to notice actually, what could I do differently then to like not have that a repeat of that again next year? So I'm always feeling positive, and I kind of just fall into this trusting the process that in between Christmas and New Year, when everyone's just sort of pigging out on camembert and chocolate and, you know, what else might be lying around the house as leftovers, that actually those reflections are going to start to come to me and give me ideas and excitement for the new year. How about you? How are you feeling?
Very similar, actually. I think I need to be a bit more disciplined in the reflection, because otherwise that bit between Christmas and New Year, I just watch rubbish movies, do jigsaws. And
oh, that's really all part of it though, Paul. Like, we've got to do that part. That's important.
Really don't do too much. So I think one thing that you said there about, you know, if you've had a tough year, I think quite often you don't appreciate exactly what you have achieved, and actually that reflection can be quite useful to go back over the year and think, well, what are all the things that I've done? What's the fun that I've had? Where are the highlights? Because you might just think, oh, it's been tough, can't wait for, oh, I've got another year coming. But actually, there's a couple of bits there. In the Ben Hunt Davis conversation, they said when they were training for the Olympics, they had an evidence wall. And every time they made a small change, every time they made a positive move, they put a post-it or a note on the evidence wall, so that over time it just built up and built up and built up.
I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of linked back to what you were saying about trusting the process, was then the further they got, the more evidence they had led them to think, well, actually, I don't need such a detailed plan. I'm just trust that, you know, over time we do this and we do what we put our minds to, we do what we say, and we're actually effective in doing this. But quite often you can forget it while we're fully remote. So I don't know where we'll put the evidence wall, but I think like an evidence wall is just really great.
I wonder if you could put it in the Slack channels. Like, what? I just have a Slack channel as an evidence wall. Yeah.
Just have this like wall of noise.
Changes we've implemented. That would just be, yeah. I feel energized just talking about it. That would be really fun, wouldn't it? Yeah, I love that.
Something lovely to look back over the year. What listeners probably don't know is that we have like a random office gossip channel on Slack that we do go over at our sort of like end of year wow celebration. And we go back through all of the rubbish that's been in the random office gossip channel. So actually having like an evidence wall of sort of like successes might be more productive.
No, not in replacement though. We'd still have to do random. Like we can't miss that. That's way too fun. In all seriousness though, we talk about reflections, and I think your conversation with Coach Kate Waterfall-Hill there was a moment in that where she talked about having some time to reflect on you and to reflect on the teams and the business and actually splitting them into two and having like your moment to reflect on you, but also you can do the reflection on the business and the team side with the teams, which I thought was really enlightening, right? Because sometimes we can just put this pressure that I have to do the reflections, I have to make the changes. But actually when you've got a team surrounding you, it's important to include them in that moment.
The question I asked Coach Kate was how can you set people up to have their best year yet next year, and her thing was start with the reflection. That obviously reflection obviously needs to start with you as the leader, but then absolutely doing that exercise with the team. Well, one of the exercises we've done with our team this year in certain groups is this stop, start, continue, and that might be a really useful thing that listeners can take into their teams, is just sit down and say, right, for us to be successful next year, what do we need to stop? What do we need to start? What do we need to continue? And that might be a useful sort of like mini framework for reflection.
I love that framework because it really forces you to hone in on one thing, right? One thing that we need to stop, one thing that we need to start, one thing that we need to continue. And you can, of course, do more if you want to, but I love that it really focuses you in on those. It's a challenge, but a really good challenge, isn't it? Excellent. We talk about, the team doing some reflections with you. And I think that leads us nicely into our third pillar, which is to bring your team on the journey, which is all about kind of getting your team involved, getting them to feel appreciated and informed on what the business is doing and what the big picture is. And that's when you're going to get real alignment from, you know, and input from them directly into your bigger picture and your bigger cause.
Conversation you had with Pete Docker was probably one of both of our highlights of the season, right?
He just completely embodies, doesn't he, like taking the team along for the ride with him. So he had a moment, he talked in general about leading with love and fear and all the love or fear and all the rest of it. But he talked about a story where he was in Iraq in 2003 and he was literally just stood with, I think, 200 people surrounding him. And he was the leader in that moment. And he made it really clear that, you know, when you're at war, there's not just the job at hand. There's all of this noise that goes on with it. There's, you know, the political opinions and propaganda and whatever's going on outside as well that's really influencing how the team can perform. And he said that in that moment, he just stopped and simplified everything for them. He just went up to each group of people and was like, right, your job is to do X, Y, and Z. And your job is to refuel this. And your job is to build this. And your job is to get this from A to B. And he said that like that was just that simplification just helped them to mute the noise of everything that was going on around them. And sometimes it really is, especially in a moment like that, where I guess you've got this extra pressure that I guess a lot of us don't have to deal with in our day-to-day jobs, but that connection with the team and just helping them to see and to focus on actually this is the job at hand, let's release anything else that's going on, release all of the other pressure and just work to get what we know we can do done was just, yeah, just that story really stuck with me. And then he went on to talk about nurturing those relationships with the team and feedback and all of the great stuff. So it was a brilliant episode just to listen to in general, but that story in and of itself, I was like, my goodness, imagine, can you imagine just being stood in between 200 troops in 2003 in Iraq? Like
in a war zone. And but then also it like just comes back to, like you said, this clarity of purpose, giving his people, his team, the clarity of purpose to go and do it, to shut out, like you say, everything else and go and do that. I think also you had another like slightly odd piece. I know that one of your highlights was, like the highlight was your conversation with Pete Docker. Do you want to share with our listeners?
Well, do you know what it was though, Paul? Because, so we ask the same question at the beginning of each podcast, right? Which is, you know, tell us something about you that we wouldn't be able to find on the internet or, you know, typically be able to just to look up. And he gave me this wonderful kind of story about how he likes to go mountain running. And he said, I've got two, but, you know, I like to go mountain running and whatnot. And it was a great story. I was like, you know, what a fun hobby to have. That's brilliant. And he almost forgot to tell me the second one. And I said, no. Can you, like, let's not move on yet. Like, I need to know what the second one was. And then he drops this bit of information that just absolutely blew my mind, which was that when that very sad day back in 1997 when Princess Diana passed away, he was the first person that was called because it was his job to get her body back to the UK from Paris. And he just sprinkled that into the conversation. And I just like, I was just in awe. I was like, my goodness, like, we just talked there about, can you imagine being stood with 200 troops surrounding you? In that moment, I was like, can you imagine getting that phone call? And of course, he was fully prepared for it. He'd already made the plans and done everything. So for him, it wasn't a big deal. But that was definitely a corker of an answer to that question. Can you tell us something about you? And the fact that he almost forgot to mention.
Skipped over it, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Almost. Wow. But yes, I think, you know, I think for so many of us, certainly, I'm going to call us those golden oldies who were alive at the point when
everyone knows where they were at that point. Yeah,
everyone knows. Yeah, but I guess no one knows more than Peter Docker, right?
Yeah, kind of puts our day to day roles into perspective
a little bit.
But I suppose like circling back there to the key pillar about bringing the team along the journey, I think it's been a consistent thread throughout our conversations this year, hasn't it? Tim Foster, we talked about trust, the importance of trust, how it all comes down to trust. We had Lord Mark Price, former managing director of Waitrose, talking about his happy economics framework. And basically, look, his thing at John Lewis and Waitrose was just have a happy team. If you have a happy team, everything else will come. And that wasn't, to be clear, just about coconut water and beers after work. It was actually addressing the fundamentals that then come back to trust and feedback and challenge, all of these things, but also like kindness and caring. Bring your team on the journey isn't just one for 2026, it's one for all time.
Extraordinary lives when people are willing to put in discretionary effort, go above and beyond. And that's more likely to happen when they feel that they belong and they're a part of something and they have a role to play. How I kept this commitment alive was, first of all, making sure that every decision I took was through that filter of that commitment. And then making sure I connected with everyone as often as I could. And by connection, I mean, that would be briefings on a daily basis, meetings. It would be sitting down, perhaps with the most junior person, and checking in with them and saying, how's things at home?
Mm.
Have you got everything you need? What are some obstacles you're finding that I could remove for you? And this nurtures that sense of belonging and unlocks all of that discretionary effort where individuals then start to do extraordinary things. And then collectively as a team, you create the conditions where history can be made.
I think if anyone's going to start anywhere, if you're sat there thinking, how on earth do I bring my team along on the journey with me? I would start with feedback personally. This has been an ongoing conversation on the podcast, off the podcast, throughout the year for me, which has been, you know, the importance of getting feedback from your team and not just getting that feedback, but actually hearing that feedback. So Mo Cangelar talked about this when we were talking about kind of diversity, equity and inclusion in that whole episode. Mo mentioned that it's all in the feedback. And I think she said this fantastic line, which is that great leaders listen. And I think feeling heard is so important for people nowadays. But that's where I'd say, focus on getting the feedback, focus on actually listening, and focus on where you're not getting the feedback as well. That's another point Mo made, was like, you know, actually those people, if you've done a survey and you've got 60%, yes, absolutely listen to the 60% feedback. But what about the 40% that didn't answer? Where are they? Why are they not answering? Like, what's going on there for them to not be giving you that feedback? So yeah, if we were to focus on bringing that team along, I think feedback's a really good place to start.
Absolutely.
Next pillar. Make a bold move. If you want to make next year look different, we talked earlier about if you particularly had a tough year, but even if you haven't, if you want to make next year look different, you have to change something meaningful, whatever that is, whatever that bold move is, it needs to be significant. And that's an interesting one, isn't it? That's an interesting and almost scary thought for going into the new year. Also challenge yourself to think of those things. They don't have to be realistic, I don't think, when you're writing that list. Like, make it as unrealistic as you want, because actually, if it is, the more unrealistic, the better sometimes, I think, because it might not, it kind of just gives you that freedom. It might not be something that you look at and go, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to be able to do that in 2026. But you might be able to take a step towards it, or you might be able, it might trigger something else that is a bit more realistic. So I'd go for it. Just wild.
And now's just a great time here to do it. And I think one of those examples were a conversation episode we did with Joe Hunter, the founder and now former CEO of 64 Million Artists. Absolutely one of the most joyful conversations I've had. Lovely perspective. Like, Joe's view is that we're all artists, and that's what inspired 64 Million Artists and our January challenge. And Joe's bold move was to step back from her business, basically step down as CEO altogether. And one of the questions I asked her was, well, how did you know why? And her view was actually that part of creativity is stepping into the unknown, embracing the unknown, and trusting that it would be fine. And actually, the comfortable thing might have been to have sat there and continued on another year, another 2 years. Her bold move was to step back and see what opportunities that opened, which for me personally, I'm an absolute planner. That blows my mind just to say, well, I'm going to stand down, chuck in my job, and we'll see what happens. I'm like, how can you do that? But it was just a really interesting thing, and I'm sure that absolutely guarantee that great things are around the corner for Joe.
This week I have announced that I am stepping down as CEO, and part of that is because I have loved it and I'm hugely passionate about it, and I sort of feel like really it's not a role that I can do in any way half-heartedly. Like, I feel really passionate about it, and actually what I miss is being back in the room with clients, with kind of facilitating, learning new things. And I think the CEO's job should be, you know, shouldn't I shouldn't necessarily be doing that. It should be doing what I have been doing as CEO. But personally, I want to now get ready to be back in the room again. And so it's a really big step, and it's a big thing to realize.
Yeah, because it was quite fresh when you were talking to her about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't completely realize. I think we recorded the episode on the Thursday, and she just made the announcement on the Monday. So
wild.
Maybe we should. Let's get her back on this time next year and see what's happened. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. But do you know what I noticed? There was kind of a link between Joe and Jamal, who I spoke to from Change Please. So Jamal runs a whole structure around supporting homeless people by giving them a job and a place to live and all the rest of it. And really getting them on track with, you know, leading a really great life and putting them on the right path. But the connection that I found between the pair was that Jamal said that he had this moment of awareness when he was on a trip to Vietnam. And he was on an 18-hour bus journey. And there was one seat left on the bus, and it was an American guy got on, and it was filled by this American guy. And he challenged him. He said, look, if you're, like, as part of their conversation, if you're not happy, you need to do the rocking chair test, which is imagining yourself in a rocking chair at the age of like 80, 90, whatever, and looking back at your life and think, you know, am I happy? Did I make a difference? Did I have purpose? And sort of planning backwards from there, really. And then he said he got off this bus, and I don't know if it was directly after, but as part of the same trip, he went to a silent tea house, which was run by deaf ladies. And so you had to like sign what tea you wanted and all the rest of it. But he just noticed the silence, right? It was just, he said it was so beautiful and so lovely. And I think between those two events, he realized that you can do business and you can make good at the same time. Long story here, but the reason that I found the link between him and Joe was they both talked about just having this moment to kind of step back and reset, and like those moments really came to them when they had those that time to kind of step away and just breathe for a second.
I was on a trip to Vietnam, just trying to discover kind of what my path of enlightenment should be, and it came on this kind of 18-hour bus journey where this American traveler sat on the bus. There was one space next to me, and he said, if you're not happy with your job or your life, you should do the rocking chair test. And that's to imagine sitting in your rocking chair at the age of 90, thinking about, yeah, how are your children going to remember you? Your grandchildren going to speak about when you're not here? Have you left the world in a better place? What's your legacy? You know, all these kind of deep, meaningful questions. And for me, it was obviously quite a difficult moment. And yeah, on that same trip in Vietnam, I stumbled across this silent tea house, where there was a tea house that was run by these ladies who some would nearly all were deaf, sorry. And they came together, created this beautiful space. And the only rule was that you had to be silent. You know, you had to order your tea with sign language. And it just blew me away. It was just so stunning. And then I realized actually you can do business and good at the same time. It didn't need to be this full-on charge or just making money.
Chloe, I think you've got a bold move lined up for next year. Would you like to share some more?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a bold move, but one that I'm really, really excited about. So for context, for anyone that might be watching or listening, I work with the Wow Company, and I also have a coaching business. And long story short, but I had a great conversation with Paul and the team at Wow about moving into a different role within the Wow team so that I could move away from my coaching business and kind of still use those skills, but to help Wow to move forward on a more kind of people focused role. And so that's going to be happening mid early next year. And I can't wait. I'm so excited to be kind of working with the team and so honored that kind of I get to work with Wow as a whole now, full time. So yeah, that's my bold move for next year.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a bold move for Wow, actually. And I think you've massively underplayed the role, Chloe. Like we're really excited that you're going to come in and really like lead on a load of our kind of like high performance journey at Wow. So probably one of the things I'm most looking forward to at Wow for 2026.
so passionate about it, and I'm so passionate about WOW as well. I just think it's going to be, you know, don't like to tempt fate, but I just think it's going to be a really lovely pairing. So can't wait.
So much goodness. Yeah. Anyway, enough about us. Let's move on to the next pillar. Next thing we want to talk about is really about habits, and like the golden rule here, I guess, is about checking your habits, looking at the things we do every day and considering how they shape your long-term results. Like, as a coach, Chloe, this must be something that you look at literally every day, right?
Yes, I'm better at helping other people with it than I am at helping myself, as is always the case, right? But yes, absolutely, building habits and also doing it in a way that is manageable. I think the problem is that sometimes we can see in the distance where we want to be, and we know potentially what habits they look like at that final point, but it can feel so far removed from where you are right there and then that it's overwhelming to get there. So I think it's really important to start building habits in a really small way and celebrating as you, like we were talking about with the evidence wall, but like actually celebrating the small changes that you're making to get there. There's a really lovely piece of artwork, slightly off piece, but slight lovely piece of artwork of two guys stood at the bottom of two different ladders, and one of the ladders has rungs really far apart, and he's just stood with his arms up and he can't even reach the first rung. And then there's another guy who all the rungs are really close together and he's almost at the top, because, you know, it's all manageable. And I think that's really a good visual for building your habits.
Yeah, I think one of the conversations I found really useful on that topic this year was we had a guy called Dr. John Finn on. He wrote a book called The Habit Mechanic, and he's just taking this to another level. Also made it really easy to understand, but his idea, or what we talked about, was, like, for example, like AI can be perceived as a massive threat to lots of organizations, lots of individuals. His view is actually a load of the really basic things we do can just be done by AI. We need to be looking at the things that only we can do. And actually the secret to only the things we can do is our habits. And he's got a whole process that he outlines in The Habit Mechanic about how we kind of identify what those habits need to be, but also how we build and maintain those habits into yearly, weekly, daily routines.
The key to being healthy, happy, and at our best in the world we live in now and in the future world is actually going to be driven by how good we are at learning and adapting. So learning how to build a better sleep habit, learning how to eat well, learning how to manage stress better, equally learning how to build AI into our workflows, learning how to create a culture so that it makes it easier for people's brains to work really well, so they can build these new, what I would call, super habits and get rid of the destructive habits.
Yeah, John was great to listen to. He really did simplify it, didn't he? But it was still like so much great information to take in. There was one thing that he said that I think really stuck with me, and that was around, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he said something around that as we look for problems, and so we choose to see AI as a threat. And that was really interesting to me, because AI has just been such a massive topic this year across the board, hasn't it? And there is still some fear-based kind of thoughts around AI and people jumping on board with it as well. But it's interesting when he said that we find these problems and we choose to see AI as a threat. I thought that was a great reframe. Slightly off piece to the habits bit there, but yeah, really interesting.
No, that whole thing I found like really interesting about, he had a thing about brain states and simplified our brain states into basically like high charge, medium charge, and recharge. And mm-hmm. actually recharge is really important, but a lot of us spend our days in medium charge, just busy chasing around doing lots of things. Probably like the build up to Christmas, build up to the end of the year is a like really good example of just that busyness that actually we're not to be successful. And to avoid burnout, to have sustainable success, we need to be operating that high charge brain state and find ways to be there as much as possible. And actually, his argument was AI can massively help us. But so just get AI to do all the medium charge stuff to free us up to do like the high charge brain state work, only the stuff which we can do.
It's really about tapping into it, isn't it? But remembering to break that down, small changes. Have you got any habits that you're looking to change or check for 2026?
Good question. So I'm not trying to be teacher's pet here, but I do. This is actually something I'm like reasonably conscious of. I suppose my thing is really not necessarily new habits, but just consistency with existing habits. What happens when you do get really busy? What does happen when? So for me, like the most important habit is sleep. And if anyone's heard me talk about sleep, including my children, they'll know that I'm an absolute bore about sleep. But actually, you go through phases where you don't have that like good enough sleep, and I think for me that's like the core habit, that kind of the foundational habit maybe that underpins everything else in my life.
You are not the only person that says this. I'm terrible with this, because if I could choose not to sleep, I absolutely would. Whereas I know people who just love sleeping, right? But I just would choose not to. So I'm one of those people that will just wait until my eyes are like, and then, you know, and then set myself up for a bad day the next day. So have you got any kind of tips around
that? No. That is my natural state. I'm exactly the same. Just keep going until there's nothing more left. And then I'll crash. But so actually, like the sleep, it's like really conscious. And I don't have the answer to it. There's brilliant books, and maybe we could do a whole podcast on sleep, because I think it is that.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it?
Important.
Okay, final pillar, and one that I think is very close to home for us, which is to know your numbers. Have a strong financial foundation, and that will underpin everything that you want to achieve, right?
Yeah, I think, like for me, running a business, it's like the numbers are the ultimate comfort blanket. I want to be able to know, well, I am able to know at the click of a button pretty much like how we're doing. And that's not the exact, it's what I call directionally correct. It's kind of like close enough. It's not waiting for month-end numbers. It's about being able to log into our accounting system and knowing that broadly we're okay. This is how we're tracking. This is how we're tracking this month, this quarter, this year. This is how we're stacking up against previous years. And I think I just can't imagine running a business where I wouldn't be able to do that. And I think if you're sat there listening to this, running a business, and you're not able to see pretty quickly how you're tracking in terms of cash or profit, revenue, then that's almost certainly something that needs fixing for next year, something I'm particularly passionate about.
Do you think people who don't know that at the click of a button sort of stay away from it because it can be overwhelming, or because they don't, like, well, why do you think people aren't using that as having that as a priority?
Yeah, so I think there's one of two things. I completely get that, so like some of the numbers can be like overwhelming or like frankly boring. It's not, none of us go into business for the sake of the numbers. They're like a necessary evil, but it's more like flying blind. You wouldn't imagine driving a car and the maps are broken, the speedo's broken, you don't know whether you've got enough battery or enough petrol or diesel left to get to the end of your journey. Like that's effectively what you're doing by not having access to that. And I think probably the bigger thing is just at some point that those accounts have got messy, they've not been managed right, and it's actually quite easily fixed. And something that I think, maybe a little plug for WOW, but something that we do quite well is being able to take that complexity, simplify it, give people meaningful information at their fingertips, but also in a way that's like relevant and easy to digest. You know, just strip away the hassle of the finance function and serve up genuine insights. And I think, I just could not imagine trying to run a business. Like it would be flying blind.
We had Bench Press Live earlier this year, and as part of Bench Press Live, we recorded a very special episode, which was our panel on the day. And we talked about all different things on the panel, and it was brilliant. But there was a moment where Nikki Gattenby joined, and she talked about lighthouse metrics. And I think that this is a really great way to kind of simplify metrics into the business. So not necessarily it is financial, but you know, it's just something that a common cause that everyone is working towards. So she told us this story about when she worked at Nissan and how they were in so much debt at Nissan that I don't remember the guy's name, but he came in and he bought it for a dollar. That's how much debt they were in. And he wanted to do a 180 turnaround. So he took this 180 number and he turned them in each individual number into a metric for the whole business to work towards. So the one was 1 million sales, 8% profit and zero debt. And so it was 180, and every single person at Nissan had to have those metrics in mind. One, two, or three metrics. Every decision that was made came back to those three metrics. And I thought that was just a really powerful, and it feels really simple, right? It probably isn't that simple, but you know, it feels really simple to have some metrics there that the whole team can jump on board with that will help drive you forward, to then lead back into what you were just saying, where, you know, get your finances right, get your reporting right, get all of that there so that you can actually have this visibility and then this common cause of everyone coming together to aim for the same thing.
Nissan turned around in 3 years, not five. And at the time, it was one of the most innovative car companies on the planet. They bought the Nissan Leaf, the mass-produced EV, to the market way before Tesla. And I think there's a lot of value in having that absolute clarity on what those lighthouse numbers are. And I took that into my business, into my last agency. And we had slightly less elegant, 190, 80, 70, 60, 50, but some numbers that everyone could remember. But more importantly, what they meant and what they could do about them. So this was 15 years ago. At the time, it was £100,000 revenue per person, 90% net promoter score from clients and ENPS for employees, 80% client retention, 70% utilization, 60 pressure seats, didn't want to get too big, and 50% net profit. Now, all of those figures were in people's action reviews, their appraisals, how they were rewarded. And our business flew and we went global and we threw off enough cash to develop two SaaS technology products, not just one, but two, both now independently bigger than the agency itself.
Yeah, it's interesting how this same stuff comes back to clarity, isn't it? And like Nikki's great. So Nikki goes into businesses and it like puts in those lighthouse metrics as a core process.
Yeah. And they look different for everyone, right? Like obviously the physical numbers look different, but some people go 90, 190, 80, 70,
yeah,
whatever.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
It's different metrics, but it's just what works for you. And that's really important, I think, with, you know, coming back to bringing the team along with you. You know, the team nowadays, especially with all the different generations within businesses, like a lot of people want to have that bigger purpose around the role that they're doing and to understand how they're helping the business. So I think to have something really simple and some really simple metrics that they can follow is just a huge game changer.
So Chloe, that brings us to the end. We've covered like the six pillars. We've had a great chat about some of our highlights, some of the brilliant guests we've had on this year. Looking ahead to next year, is there who would be your dream guest that you'd like to have on the Beautiful Business Podcast?
Do you know what, right? If I had to go out there, I would actually love to get Joe Wicks and possibly Nikki Wicks onto the podcast, because I appreciate their work ethic. And Joe Wicks often talks about how he came from literally standing outside of a station with printed off flyers to go to his boot camp and nobody ever turning up, to now running a multi-million pound, you know, fitness app and, you know, all the rest of it, but also the good that he does with it as well. The fact that he's genuinely trying to help people to enjoy exercise, enjoy food. So I think it falls quite nicely into our Beautiful Business kind of ethic and everything that we talk about. So that would be a good one for me. How about you?
For me personally, my dream guest, I would love to get Brendan McCullum, the England cricket coach, on the podcast. He's pioneered this exciting brand of cricket that's been dubbed Bazball. And so much of his approach is all in the mind. It's not necessarily training techniques. It's about creating a team environment, giving his team the freedom to play, to be aggressive, to take things to the opposition, be on the front foot. I'd love to know how, after losing some, like, quite convincingly cricket matches, then all the critics come in and criticize his approach, his philosophy, and say, well, that's the end of Basball. Basball's dead. How he deals with that, how he turns that around. He seems a really sort of, like, thoughtful and interesting guy. So if anyone knows Baz, as he's known to his friends, I would love an introduction and to get him on the podcast.
And before we move into kind of, like, completely wrapping this up, earlier you asked me what my favourite moment was, and we talked about Peter Docker. You must have a favourite moment from this year.
Do you know what? It's so hard to put a finger on it. I feel like we've been so lucky to talk to some of the people we've spoken to. I had one of the most insightful conversations of my life with Tim Foster, the Olympic rower, and just such a beautiful man with a beautiful outlook on the world, and really found that fascinating, his whole thing about trust and how open he was with us. Lord Mark Price was brilliant. And actually, one of my highlights was something that happened that wasn't recorded, was we were just having it. He was asking me questions about, like, me personally and my business. And he said, so his thing is happy economics and just happy workplace. And he said to me, he said, Paul, you know that happiness has to start with you. You know it's okay to want to be happy, don't you? And he just left it silent. And I was nearly in tears after that.
I was going to say, yeah.
It was really, really hard-hitting, and one of those things that I've come back to a lot through the year. But probably my absolute highlight was we had my friend and absolute inspiration, Amelia Wrighton, founder and CEO of Suicide & Co On. And she just came out with this quote at the end that I think is a brilliant way to, like, close out our episode, which was, if you can be there in the boring, you can be there in the beautiful. And that, for me, just perfectly summed up beautiful business, that it's not just about the good times. Sometimes it's just about doing the hard yards, and then the beautiful is the reward for that.
I know, listening to it myself, I picked it out, and then I know, speaking to you and then every conversation we've had, it's like, actually, what an amazing
just encapsulated
quote
it in a sentence. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Gosh,
and
yeah,
now I need to find a way to get that on a t-shirt. So
whether you take one of these rules or all six of them, thank you so much for listening this year. We've enjoyed every single guest that has joined us on the podcast.
Thank you to all of our guests. Thanks to the team behind the scenes that put the podcast together, put it out. We're very much excited for 2026. We've got loads of exciting things planned. So, and we'll see you in 2026.
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub, or check out the link in the show notes.